This is Passing Judgment, a podcast about the law and how it affects you. I'm your host, Loyola Law School professor Jessica Levinson. Think of me as your personal law professor as we navigate the big legal questions of the day with some of the biggest newsmakers. Hey, everybody. Today, I'm thrilled to bring you a special episode all about election 2024 and where the candidates stand on the issues. Our guest is Maggie Astor. She works with the politics and breaking news desks at the New York Times. Her coverage is wide-ranging. She covers campaigns, voting rights, activism. If it relates to politics, she is probably reporting on it. I loved having this conversation with her because it went way past the headlines and the noise and what the candidates say they stand for and really went to the heart of the differences between their policy proposals on the most important issues facing our country. So I hope you'll give it a listen. And as always, please rate, review, and subscribe. Maggie, thank you so much for being here. You and I have been able to talk on the phone a few times, but never on this podcast. And now I understand this might be your maiden voyage on a podcast. So I'm so happy you're here, and I'm so happy to talk to you about all the fine work that you do for the New York Times.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
So I know that the big project you've been working on right now is where Kamala Harris and Donald Trump stand on the issues. Can you talk to us first just a little bit about the scope of the project and the aim of the project? I assume it's basically to educate voters on trying to make an informed decision.
Yeah, that's exactly it. So this is a sort of side-by-side comparison of two candidates on an array of policy issues. It started with six: abortion, climate change, democracy, the economy, immigration, and Israel and Gaza. And I've been adding issues since then, added crime, added foreign policy, added healthcare just today, actually. So it's intended to be a very straightforward, this is what they have done in their past time in office. This is what they have said they would do. This is what their records indicate. And it's, yeah, intended to be a comparison service.
In a world in which we really need more facts, this is such a useful endeavor. And before we dive in issue by issue, was there something that surprised you where you thought, wow, I've, you know, read the coverage or I've seen the reporting, but when you really dug in to look at where the candidates' views were, you thought, oh, that this is not what I previously understood?
Well, I guess I'm not the most representative person on that because as a political reporter, I'm constantly immersed in this stuff. So there were certainly for both candidates elements of their record where I was like, oh yeah, I forgot that she said that, or oh wow, I forgot this thing that happened in 2018 under Trump, but it was more being reminded of things than getting huge surprises.
So let's go to one of the big issues, and I think this is maybe Kamala Harris's strongest issue, or the issue where she seems the most comfortable talking to the voters, and that is abortion. And I think there's a high-level understanding of Kamala Harris saying, this is a healthcare issue, I am pro-choice. And then there's a high-level understanding that former President Donald Trump appointed some more conservative justices that allowed for the court to overturn Roe v. Wade. That was, of course, the decision that enshrined the right to obtain an abortion in the Constitution. But Donald Trump, in my view, has been not entirely clear on where he currently stands, in part because I think he realizes that this is an issue that affects a lot of people and in very deeply and might cut across partisan lines. So I'm wondering if you could lay out a little bit in terms of abortion and what you hope listeners who maybe haven't seen your reporting yet, what you hope listeners would know.
Yeah, absolutely. So Kamala Harris's position is pretty straightforward on this issue. She supports abortion rights. She believes that Roe v. Wade was rightly decided and shouldn't have been overturned. And her main policy proposal is she wants Congress to pass essentially a law that would protect the rights that Roe previously protected. So essentially protecting a broad right to abortion up until fetal viability. And with some, you know, protections after that for medical emergencies, for example. But basically codifying Roe is the main point for Harris. And there are also some, you know, other issues around making abortion more accessible, even where it is legal. So, for example, she supports the Biden administration's cancellation of the global and domestic gag rules, which had cut off funding for groups that provided abortion services or referrals. Trump had put those back in place. And then when we look at Trump, his position is, you know, he's tried to muddle it a lot over the past few months. The record in his first term is very clear. He appointed three justices to the Supreme Court. He specifically said that he was going to appoint justices who would oppose Roe v. Wade. He did. And those justices, along with three others, voted to overturn Roe. And he has repeatedly praised the decision to overturn Roe. He has taken responsibility for it. And he has said that he supports states being able to enact essentially whatever restrictions or bans on abortion they want to. Where he has sort of tried to muddle things lately is he has said that he wouldn't sign a federal ban on abortion, meaning he has said that he wouldn't sign legislation that said abortion must be illegal nationwide. That still leaves open the, you know, the ability of many states to ban abortion within their borders, as many have since Roe was overturned. And one question that is very important, but that he just hasn't really given a concrete answer on, is the Comstock Act. It's an 1873 law. It prohibits mailing materials used in abortions. If it were enforced strictly, it could effectively make abortion inaccessible nationwide, even without a federal ban. His campaign didn't give a yes or no answer when I asked them whether he would support enforcing that. He did do an interview with, I believe it was CBS a couple months ago, and he gave a sort of vague no. He said, we'll be discussing specifics of it, but generally speaking, no, I wouldn't. So that's the general landscape on abortion.
Maggie, that's so helpful because there's so much noise and you really just told us exactly where they are, or frankly, where they are sometimes. And as you said, with former President Trump, I think it does shift a bit. We can talk about why that's the case, but it is, I think, harder to pin down. You mentioned something, another issue, and I'm so fascinated by how you would characterize this because it's such a big one. And it's something that President Joe Biden, I think, tried to make the campaign about before he stepped out of the campaign. And that's democracy. You know, he said that our country is facing an existential crisis. And while we may agree or disagree, it seems like that's not something that tends to move the voters, but I'm hoping you could talk to us about what was your definition of this issue and what are the highlights for each candidate?
Yeah, so democracy is, I mean, it's obviously an incredibly wide-ranging issue and an incredibly fundamental one. I mean, most elections don't have democracy as an actual point of debate in them. It's just the playing field on which the whole election is conducted. But I divided it into three categories. One is really the most fundamental, transfer of power. Is this candidate going to accept a loss? Is this candidate going to accept the validity of elections? Harris has committed to accepting the results of the election. She has also committed that come January 6th, when she, as the sitting vice president, is in the position of overseeing the certification of the electoral votes, she has confirmed that she won't try to intervene in that. Trump, of course, did both of those things in 2020. He refused to accept the outcome of the election, which was his loss. He pressured Mike Pence to refuse to certify the results. And he has not committed to accepting the results of the 2024 election. He has been preemptively sowing doubt about the validity of the election and suggesting that there will be fraud in it, and just generally not accepting the premise that a loss is definitively a loss. So that's the most fundamental Democratic norm. But I also did look within that category at voting rights and executive power. On voting rights, Harris supports two pieces of legislation that Biden also supported, but he wasn't able to pass because of Republican filibusters. That's the John Lewis Voting Rights Advancement Act, which would restore sections of the Voting Rights Act that the Supreme Court has struck down or weakened. And the second is the Freedom to Vote Act, which is this really sprawling bill that would set a floor for voting access in federal elections, essentially meaning that states could enact more inclusive voting rights procedures, but not less inclusive ones. So it would preempt some of the voting restrictions that have been passed in a lot of Republican-led states over the past few years. It would expand automatic voter registration, require at least 15 days of early voting, restore voting rights to felons upon their release from prison, restrict partisan gerrymandering. It would also actually include a national voter ID requirement, which is something that Democrats typically haven't supported, though the particular voter ID requirement in this bill would accept a much larger range of documents than a lot of Republican-led voter ID bills. So, for example, it would accept utility bills. You wouldn't necessarily have to have a photo ID driver's license. Trump opposes both of those bills, and he's repeatedly, dating back to 2020, disparaged early voting, disparaged various, you know, standard voting procedures as somehow fraudulent or prone to fraud. He also, as president, he established a commission to investigate voter fraud, which is vanishingly rare. That commission didn't find any evidence of it, and he ultimately disbanded it. And then the final one is executive power. Trump has indicated that he might intervene in Justice Department prosecution decisions, try to weaponize the government against his political opponents. Harris, in comparison, she's on record describing the Justice Department's independence in its prosecution decisions as essential. And there's other aspects to executive power, too. Of course, Trump, as president, issued an executive order that sought to strip civil service protections from many career federal employees, which would have meant, in simpler terms, that these career employees in the various federal agencies who normally remain from administration to administration, his executive order would have let him fire them at will. And that's something that he's also talked about doing in a potential second term, to sort of clear federal agencies of career employees who might oppose his policies. And he's made a lot of, you know, anti-democratic statements. He's talked, when he was asked on Fox News at one point whether he was going to be a dictator, he said no, other than day one. He talked about closing the border and drilling, meaning fossil fuels, on day one, and then, quote, after that, I'm not a dictator.
Right. Maggie, I could do this all day, in the sense of, I feel like this is the guide that we need for every candidate when it comes to elected office. And we've just talked about abortion and democracy. I want to ask you next about the economy, but so far there have been really stark differences. Were there places where they were actually more aligned than maybe either they have been with respect to democracy or abortion, or then maybe the average voter might expect? Was there a particular area where there was a lot of overlap?
Yeah, so there are some areas of overlap on economics, actually. So the this big package of tax cuts that Trump signed into law in 2017, those were, you know, sweeping cuts across the board, including for the wealthiest Americans and corporations. So Trump wants to expand or extend, rather, make permanent those tax cuts across the board. Harris doesn't want to do that, but she does want to extend them for people making less than $400,000.
Mm-hmm.
So Harris wants to raise taxes on corporations and wealthy Americans, whereas Trump doesn't. So that's a difference. But they do both want to extend the 2017 tax cuts for people making less than $400,000, which is the majority of the country, the majority of voters. So that's one area of overlap. Another, to some extent, is tariffs. Tariffs have been a really big thing for Trump. He has called for just sweeping tariffs. He suggested tariffs of 60% or more on Chinese products, 10 to 20% on other imports, 100% on cars made by Chinese companies in Mexico. Harris does not support anything that sweeping, and she's pretty loudly condemned those calls as you know, something that would increase prices and potentially lead to a recession. And there are quite a few economists who agree with that assessment. But she has called for much more limited tariffs. She hasn't been very specific about exactly how large the tariff she supports would be in comparison to Trump's, or, you know, exactly what countries or what ways she would apply them. But her campaign did say that she would use, quote, targeted and strategic tariffs. So there is, while there's a huge difference in degree there, tariffs were kind of not a popular policy in either party before recent years. So it is notable that Harris is also supporting them, albeit in a much more limited way.
Maggie, this is a place where I do get a lot of questions from people who I think are honestly trying to figure out, past all the campaign rhetoric, what would each candidate mean for their daily lives when it comes to economic plans? And I think you laid out very clearly some of the places where there are overlap and there are differences. I'm wondering if a fair question for you is, when it comes to economists and their view of which plan might be most helpful for our economy overall, is there any consensus there, whether it's Harris or Trump, or are there different parts of each plan? Or is it, as I remember from my days very long ago as an economics major, is it like picking a weather forecast and it's really difficult to come to any consensus?
I think it's difficult in some respects just because we don't have all the details of either plan. There are principles there, but not necessarily numbers. There was one study from a nonpartisan group, I believe last week or maybe the week before, that estimated the cost of the two plans in terms of the deficit. And it found that both their plans would add significantly to the national debt, but that Trump's plans would add about twice as much.
Mm.
I'm not sure that that's necessarily what most people are looking at in terms of their everyday lives and finances. So that's, I know, not a super satisfying answer, but I don't want to, you know, go beyond the specific economic expertise I've gathered.
Well, is there, so we understand that most Americans do make under $400,000 a year. Is there an answer, you think, and I know this is not opinion, this is objective journalism, in terms of, you know, people say, well, Republicans are always better on the economy and Democrats are better on social issues. I mean, when it comes to the economy, is there, if they were able to pass their proposals, which, as you and I know, neither one will be able to pass all the things that they claim that they can do, just because that's the nature of how our government functions, not because we're saying anything about the candidates, but is there a sense of there's a group who would benefit more under Trump's plan and there's a different group that would benefit more under Harris's plan? Or is it, do we just not have enough details yet?
So I don't know that I can, you know, make sweeping statements, but I mean, certainly there are specific proposals that each of them have that would affect some groups more than others. And I can give a couple examples. Trump has been focusing relatively heavily on further tax cuts for corporations. Mm-hmm. He already cut the corporate tax rate in his first term, and he is calling for cutting it significantly more in a second. He also introduced a policy to eliminate taxes on tips and on Social Security benefits. It is far from clear how either of those proposals would work or how he would handle the resulting gap in the Social Security fund. But certainly those are policies that would affect specific groups more than others. Harris also adopted the no tax on tips proposal after he did. And then there's also on the Harris side, she wants to significantly expand the child tax credit, which would have a really big impact on parents. She wants to restore an expansion from earlier in the pandemic that reduced child poverty before it expired because Republicans in Congress refused to renew it. That would bring the child tax credit up to a maximum of $3,600 per child. But she's also proposing to bring that credit to $6,000 for the parents of newborns. So for the first year after birth, and that would be higher. So that's a significant policy for parents. She's also proposed some specific tax deductions for first-time homeowners and for small business startups. So those are some examples of the more targeted economic policies.
Yeah, that is extraordinarily helpful, again, because I feel like we are, even when we try hard, we can often be low information voters. And I know our time is limited. I feel like we could do hours on just these topics of the difference between the two. One of the things that former President Trump talks about a lot is crime. And I know you mentioned this as one of the areas you added. Again, I want to direct everybody to your explanatory pieces in the New York Times, where you cover everything we're talking about and more in a lot of detail. And it's been really useful for me. Former President Trump talks a lot about crime. And my response often is most crime is state level. Most crime, when it comes to policy, is really made by district attorneys and attorneys general. But this is a big topic. And of course, Kamala Harris has tried to make this a big topic to a certain extent by saying it's the prosecutor versus the felon. But despite who they are and their backgrounds, could you educate us a little bit about what they actually are proposing in terms of their differences on their views on crime? Again, because my understanding is the vast majority of what we're talking about when we really worry about crime, those are state crimes, and that federal crimes are the minority of crimes that are tried, that we talk about, but we tend to think presidents have more power than they actually do.
Yeah, I mean, this is one of the areas where there's a really stark difference between the two of them, not even so much in specific policies as just in, you know, Harris is proposing a variety of policies that, you know, you might hear from any number of Democratic candidates. And then Trump is proposing things that we really have never heard before from any major candidate. You know, he's proposing fighting crime by deploying the military to Democratic-run cities, potentially by invoking the Insurrection Act. And he's calling for these enormous, you know, militarized federal interventions in cities. And it's just, it's not, you know, like a traditional policy comparison between the two. But Harris supports, she has said she supports more funding for the police. That's a change from where she stood in her 2019 presidential campaign, when she argued, she never called for abolishing the police or anything like that, but she did argue in 2019 that putting more police on the street would not make communities safer, that in order to make communities safer, you needed to invest in things like healthcare and education and services like that, housing, to address the root causes of crime. She is now calling for more funding for the police while also calling for more investment in things like education and healthcare and housing. But then one specific difference between the two of them would be on guns. Harris has made restrictions on guns a major component of her policies for addressing crime. Mm-hmm. She wants to implement universal background checks for gun purchases. She supports bans on assault weapons and high-capacity magazines. And she also supports red flag laws, which allow the removal of guns from people whom a court deems to pose a threat to themselves or others. Trump does not support any significant gun control measures. He did support a ban on bump stocks when he was president. He enacted that. The Supreme Court struck that down this year, and he has since basically said, no gun restrictions. I'm going to reverse all of the Biden administration's gun restrictions, and I won't implement any new ones.
Yeah, again, stark differences. Maggie, I know I asked you for a few minutes less than we've already been talking, so I do want to recommend to everybody again that they follow your great reporting and these really helpful pieces in the New York Times. If we could conclude with, is there one other area where you just wish that voters knew a little bit more about the differences in their proposals? Because this is really helping me in terms of thinking through when people talk to me about, you know, pros and cons or comparisons. It's really helping to get beyond the headlines and behind the noise into, okay, let's talk about what the specific differences are. So is there one last area where you'd love to make sure that we cover it?
Yeah, I mean, I think climate change is a really important one.
Yeah.
Certainly we're seeing the effects of that all around us. And it's also one of the areas where their policies differ most starkly. I'll try to give a just succinct explanation. Trump withdrew from the Paris Agreement in his first term. He has said that he would withdraw again if he's elected again. He effectively disavows the concept of trying to address climate change. He wants to increase U.S. production of fossil fuels, including coal, oil, gas. He has repeatedly disparaged renewable energy, including especially wind energy, but also solar. He has said that he would rescind, quote, every one of the Biden administration's electricity regulations, which include, you know, a variety of rules that the Biden administration has passed to try to push industries more away from fossil fuels and toward renewable energy, to promote electric vehicles, that sort of thing. And Harris's policies, they aren't fully fleshed out in terms of, you know, specific regulations, specific pieces of legislation, but she does support the Paris Agreement. She supports the principle of government action to combat climate change. And the principle that the country should be moving in a gradual way from fossil fuels toward renewable energy. She supports the big pieces of legislation the Biden administration passed toward that end. She was the tie-breaking vote on the Inflation Reduction Act, which was the biggest ever U.S. government investment in mitigating climate change. She supports things like subsidies for renewable energy and government incentives and disincentives to push in that direction. So I think that's it's obviously a very important issue and one where the candidates are quite far apart.
And as you said, pressing right now as we talk about hurricanes and natural disasters, and it no longer is this abstract thing where we, quote, only have a few years before we see change, here we are. Well, Maggie, again, I already took more of your time than I asked for. This has been so helpful. And again, I want to recommend to everybody that as we're marching through the final days of the election, that they look at your explanatory pieces, because I know you've spent a lot of time and it saves us a lot of time and it helps to educate all of us. So thank you again for this.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you for having me.